What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the Odyssey app. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network. We're brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Going to get to the Junkies blitz momentarily, but we were kicking this around during the break. I guess Valdez told Drab that a lot of Commanders fans are rooting against Caleb Williams because, in a way, it props Jaden Daniels up
a
little bit.
Isn't that kind of petty?
It's just something I noticed.
Isn't that a petty move?
It is petty. But it's something I noticed. There's people taking glee in Caleb struggling, and especially
I'm just kind of out on his off the field antics. Which again, you know, I don't care about Abrams. I just don't like some of the off the field stuff. It annoys me. Painting the fingernails.
Right.
What are you doing?
But people are rooting against him because they want to be. Right. They want they want Adam Peters to make the right decision and take Jaden.
Well, but Peters didn't have a choice.
But I'm just saying, like, they want to feel like they won the debate, I guess.
It's not like they bypassed Caleb Williams. They didn't have the opportunity to draft him.
They might have taken him. I'm sure they'll never tell you the truth.
It's just something I noticed with fans, and then I ran it by Mar, who is the number two Redskins fan on the show behind Eric.
Yeah.
And he goes, I definitely take some glee in Caleb struggling.
I definitely do, too. But also because we did the whole quarterback ranking thing, and Mar was part of that, wasn't he? Did you rank him?
No, I didn't rank any of them.
We ranked.
He just
them
provided the boards,
and I think I had Jaden number one on my board.
I might have been the only one that had Caleb one.
The guy. Who
did anybody else have Caleb one?
I'd have to recheck.
Jason
my board.
Had Drake May
I think
one.
I had Caleb one.
Yeah,
because I'm a shrewd talent evaluator. The other person is really rooting for Caleb to perform poorly. Is it at first round mock?
Who we yes, have?
Like. He's made a brand out of saying Caleb Williams is going to struggle in the pros.
Yeah.
Like, that's his thing on Twitter. And look, it's early. It's 3 weeks, but so far his brand is pretty accurate.
Well, he also had Spencer Rattler number one.
Understood.
Like, above Jaden Daniels, above everybody.
When you're predicting hits or misses, you're going to have both hits and misses in the NFL draft game. It just happens.
So, but Caleb has thrown. I mean, that first interception was. He obviously made the decision to throw that route when he got out of the huddle.
Mm-hmm.
And the corner was just sitting on it, waiting for it as he threw it. And that happens at times. I saw this from Josh Allen. We all want to judge guys early. It's natural. I do it maybe even faster than most of you guys usually. But I saw Josh Allen say this about Caleb Williams. He says, he's played a lot of big-time games, whether it was at Oklahoma or USC. I think he understands the game. Obviously, the first couple of games in your NFL career, if they don't go your way, it doesn't mean it's going to define your career.
Right.
And then he goes on to throw in some cliches. I think he's going to keep working hard, playing football the way he knows how to play the game. I think he's missed on some throws, which he can make. Like, he had Odunze. That would have been a tough throw when he was rolling to his left. And he missed him. And I think, look, there were, in the first game, he had a touchdown pass, which was dropped. I think his stat lines could be different. The interception's troubling, but I also just think it's a rookie. Most of these rookies are struggling. Bo Nix hasn't thrown a touchdown. He had a good game yesterday. Still doesn't have a touchdown pass. Jaden Daniels ran into in the first game. Still doesn't have a touchdown pass. Maybe it'll change tonight. But the rookies are struggling.
Well, it's three games in.
I actually don't think Jaden Daniels is struggling. I would argue Jaden Daniels not struggling.
I wouldn't lump him in with Nix and Williams. Like, I know that was a popular story last week, was to highlight the fact that they hadn't thrown any touchdowns yet, but Jaden's rushed for two, and he's run the offense pretty effectively as it's been presented to him.
Well,
the touchdowns are going to come.
Well, all right, he's also thrown the ball half the amount of times.
Understood.
True. So Caleb Williams is second in the league in attempts. A young quarterback, if you're going to ask him to throw the ball 118 times.
You know what? blame Shane Waldron.
No, yeah.
Point the finger
that's
right
the
at
same
him.
Thing we said about Sam Howell.
Yeah.
And everyone said, oh, it's just Sam Howell because, you know, he's a fifth-round draft pick or whatever. But see,
and,
it even happens with the number one
I understand
overall.
Why he's throwing the ball a lot. Look at their backfield. DeAndre Swift's done nothing.
He's done nothing. He's
Roshan
a big
Johnson
dud.
And Khalil Herbert. Like, it's just a weird mix there that's not effective. So they have to put it on his shoulders early, which is what they don't want to do. Like, if they had a stud running back, if they had Kyren Williams back there instead of the three guys I just mentioned, it might look different. It would be a different story. But
so,
they don't.
So even now, look, Jaden's played one less game, obviously, because he's playing tonight. But Nick's is fourth in the league in attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb, like I said, is second.
Right.
So even if Jaden throws the ball 25 times tonight, he's still going to be 30 or 40 back of those guys in terms of attempts. If, the more you throw it, you're going to throw picks.
But that's good. I like that. That's where people should be praising Cliff Kingsbury. I know there are a
they've
lot
been
of people
able
are,
to run,
are
yeah.
attacking him because all the throws that are so close to the line of scrimmage. How about you give him kudos for not overloading his rookie quarterback?
Sure.
With, you know, a bunch of exotic passing concepts when he's not, if he's not ready for them or if they're not becoming available down the field.
We'll also remember this part of it. And believe me, I hate it as much as anybody. I'm sitting there going, this, we got to get more creative.
Sure.
But as I pointed out earlier, our defense is so mediocre that short passes, just keep the clock running, stay mm-hmm. in bounds, maintain yeah. possession,
he knows that.
Have 9-minute drives. Yeah, he's not
Cliff's
stupid.
Well aware of how bad the defense is.
Right. So
sees it every day.
That's part of the design, too.
Of course.
You know, we just can't afford to not have the ball.
Yeah, and again, I think you're going to see another heavy run-centric approach tonight. If they get out to a 30-10 lead, and then you have to throw to try to get back, you're going to see them running the ball again.
And we're coming off a great game for Brian Robinson. I don't know where that ranks in his career, but that's got to be
up
there.
He's looked fantastic so far.
That's got to be up there. Eckler's looking great. Ertz is looking great while he stays healthy. So
almost lost game two. Like, you're sounding like this Commanders team. And maybe they're going to be fine. Like, this Commanders team is in really good shape, and Jaden is playing this great football. If they lose tonight, which most of us expect, they're going to be 1-2, and they could have lost against the Giants, but for Malik Nabers' drop.
I didn't say any of that. I just said Jaden Daniels is not struggling.
I know, but you started whipping off, this guy's looking great, this guy's looking great, this guy's looking great. I mean,
well, it doesn't matter. The three guys out of 53.
He's not struggling like these other two in terms of the statistical part of it, like the ints. But if he was asked to throw the ball more, he could have two or three or four picks.
Listen,
he's also played one less game.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's played one less. That's what I'm saying. But if he's throwing the ball 120 times in three games, mm-hmm. he's going to throw picks. Caleb Williams is throwing the ball 118 times.
He's not going to go through his entire rookie season and not throw picks.
Right. No, Jaden, of course. But my whole thing with Caleb is I think overall he's just more of a freelancer. I think this is what you're going to see from him.
Maybe.
Up and down. Maybe he'll lock in and get rid of some of this stuff. But this is what he did in college. He ran around and tried to create a lot of stuff sometimes.
That's true.
Well, sure. And people compared him to Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes does a lot of that. You just got to hit. You got to hit some of those.
Right. I don't think he's Patrick Mahomes. Okay? Until proven otherwise. I see why you're saying that, but...
Because of style of play? Yeah. It's hard to...
Is he gonna have that elite touchdown interception ratio and be that big of a freelancer? I doubt it.
I think he's gonna rein some of the freelancing in, even though that's a huge part of his game. I think he's gonna realize that he can't be that big of a freelancer in the NFL. Got away with it at SC in Oklahoma.
Look, it's a hard position, man.
Sure. It's the hardest position.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's the hardest job.
Surprised at all that these guys are struggling. You know me. I think 50% of them are going to be just okay, if not busts.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good crop. But we'll see. We'll see. I haven't even seen. I mean,
I'm kind of stunned.
May.
I know this is
haven't
a
seen
tangent.
May or Penix.
I'm stunned at how bad Anthony Richardson has looked.
I'm not
stunned.
I thought
Anthony Richardson would look better.
That was the
than
knock
he has.
On him in college.
I know.
He's not a good passer. He's a
he
runner.
Shouldn't
he's
be.
An
he
athlete.
Hadn't played much. He didn't. He didn't.
Played
yeah.
1 year.
Yeah.
You know what? Since you bring it up, let's get into the Junkies Blitz brought to you by Offenbacher's. Visit them in Herndon, Rockville, Gainesville, or Annapolis. They have a huge selection of hot tubs, swim spas, fire pits, pool tables, and outdoor furniture. So, what do we learn on Sunday in week 3? Since you bring up Anthony Richardson, I think the larger takeaway is the young quarterbacks are struggling.
Yep.
Caleb Williams, in that game, a couple of interceptions. Anthony Richardson, a couple of interceptions. And by and large, what you're seeing is the value of experience. So the experienced quarterbacks, like Sam Darnold, they're actually playing better than a lot of these young guys who are more hyped right now.
Darnold, well, true. I mean, just efficient yesterday. 17 for 28.
Yeah.
Didn't even pass for 200 yards, 181. But four touchdowns and no picks, took care of the ball, didn't turn it over to the Texans. They throttled Houston. That game wasn't even close.
And the Flores defense
CJ Stroud threw a horrible interception.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was the rookie of the year last year, and we're hyping him. He had a horrible interception. That's what these quarterbacks are going to do. Young quarterbacks are going to do that.
What did we learn?
And you know what? See, some of the veterans. Derek Carr threw a terrible interception yesterday when they had a chance to drive down the field and possibly tie the game up, if not win it.
I think we've learned that Kevin O'Connell can coach.
Yes,
certainly.
It's his third season, 13-4 his first season. Last year went sideways, 7-10, but the Vikings off to a 3-0 start. We learned Andy Dalton can still play.
Yeah.
And he made a huge difference to the Carolina offense.
I thought he would make a difference. I didn't think it would be to the tune of over 300 and three passing touchdowns. Like, I didn't think that was going to happen.
That's incredible.
I knew he was capable, but he played like a star.
Well, just think about how different the offense looked because he was able to move the ball through the air. Chuba, 114 yards.
He did work.
They were never running the ball that well when Bryce Young was there.
And he chipped in the receiving game, too. I think he had 55 yards receiving.
He did. He had five catches.
Deontay Johnson was a monster.
Did you see the report over the weekend? I'm sure you did. Somehow I saw it. That multiple teams have inquired about Bryce Young's availability.
Sure.
Even though the Panthers have said they're not trading.
I wonder if the Dolphins are one of those, because now they're going to be down to their third string quarterback.
Well, we learned that they are cooked without a quarterback. The Dolphins are.
And if you
fall 1-2, lose to Seattle. Seattle 3-0 start for the Seahawks.
What were you going to say, Drab?
About Bryce Young, the talk last week was, well, how could he possibly succeed with all the trash talent he has around him? There's nobody on that team that can help him out. And then Dalton goes in there and lights it up.
And Deontay Johnson and Chuba.
They look like Pro Bowlers with a savvy QB.
Makes Bryce look even worse.
Makes him work.
Worse than before.
Those teams aren't calling today, I bet.
They're
maybe calling
what?
Last week.
But it's another example of
they might be calling about Andy Dalton.
It's another example.
Malik Willis situation.
It's another example of the inexperience versus the experience. You put in an experienced. He was a good quarterback in Cincinnati for many years. I'm about to call him a journeyman, but I think he's better than journeyman
because
he was a solid NFL quarterback.
But he's become a backup
at the end of his career, like a Flacco.
But it shows you the value of that experience.
Yeah, he has seen everything.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
We learned Derrick Henry's not washed. That's for sure.
Oh, I knew that.
That Dallas Cowboys defense. Oof, maybe they missed Dan Quinn. I'm not sure exactly.
No, they couldn't stop the run last year.
What the issue is there? Well, it's certainly continued into this year because they got gouged last week and the Ravens just completely steamrolled them. Now, I know that the Ravens kind of let them back in it late, but, I mean, that game was out of hand early.
Well, I mean, those first two drives, they just went right down the field.
We saw this against Washington. Malik Nabers is the truth.
He's really good.
Yeah, I mean, he's heavily targeted, acrobatic. Touchdown catch, his first touchdown.
There are certain guys, like Micah Parsons is one for me, Malik Nabers, where you only need to see him one time, and you know, that guy's the real deal.
Eight catches, 78 yards, two touchdowns. We've goofed on the Giants front office and Daboll and Joe Shane by having Daniel Jones there again.
Yep.
But their thought was, give him a stud receiver and we'll see. Rough first game, but the last two games have been pretty good for Daniel Jones. Four touchdowns, no picks, obviously involving Nabers a ton.
And Nabers targets through three games, 37. That's five clear of Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's more than Amari Cooper, more than Rashee Rice, who's heavily targeted by Patrick Mahomes. So this is going to continue. You're going to see Daniel Jones looking Malik Nabers' way throughout the season.
And honestly, that was the plan. The plan was, correct, if we're going to stay with Jones, we got to get him a receiver.
And they did.
And they got him a dog.
Yep. We learned that Saquon Barkley, pretty valuable.
Yeah, it's a pretty pretty good pickup.
How many
by
touchdowns did I predict for the season? I predicted 15. He might be more than that.
He's ahead of the pace.
100%.
Yeah.
He's a stud.
He's run for 351 yards in three games.
He won them the
game. Four touchdowns rushing. He hasn't done a ton receiving wise. He does have one receiving touchdown, but five touchdowns so far for Saquon Barkley. Eagles needed that win. We also learned that the Saints aren't a juggernaut. All that talk about, you know, they almost had 100 points in the first two games.
Well, 47 of those came against the Panthers with Bryce Young at the helm. So maybe that's a little bit counterfeit. Though they did shove it on the Cowboys. Maybe the Cowboys are counterfeit too.
I don't even know who is the offense coordinator of the Falcons, but we learned that he's stupid.
Yeah.
So last night, Kirk Cousins had a chance to have another game-winning drive.
Zach Robinson?
Look it up.
I think that's correct.
Let me check that.
So the Chiefs have the lead, 22-17.
Zach Robinson, yes. Yeah.
The Falcons get the ball back on their 35, I believe it is, with 2 minutes and 26 seconds left. They start moving the ball down the field. On a second down, Kirk hits Drake London just a yard short of the first down. They called a timeout, minute and 10 left. They're on the 13-yard line. Have to score a touchdown to win, but you're in a good position to do it. On third and one, they're going shotgun and hand it to Bijan. That gets stuffed. Then on fourth and one, and actually they were closer. It was probably like fourth and a half. Mm-hmm. They opt not to go tush-push, quarterback sneak. They ran a sweep, which gets stuffed. Chiefs win. They're 3-0. Falcons fall to 1-2.
And by the way, a Chiefs defender was mugging Kyle Pitts in the end zone. Completely mugging him.
They got away with it.
No flag. Yeah. Flag stays in the pocket. Meanwhile, the week before, ticky-tack PI call for the Chiefs. Flag thrown.
I hate to be this guy, but the NFL has an officiating problem. It really does.
I've seen a lot of people say that.
I don't disagree with you.
Like, there's a lot of calls that are impacting games. And it's
or non-calls. Or,
yeah. It's really bad. And if you watch college football on Saturday, these games are much better officiated than these games on Sunday.
That's surprising because the NFL should have the best.
I would say college games are better officiated than NFL games.
I might say also that NCAA Division I volleyball has an officiating problem because I believe they cheated at Syracuse yesterday.
Really?
Literally cheated.
But a lot of these calls and non-calls are really impacting games.
Yeah.
And especially because the NFL's designed – for teams to kind of be equal and come down to the last play, it's hurting the game. And it's noticeable, too.
Although the Kansas City Chiefs, they were called for three defensive penalties on that drive.
Okay, well, the most important one, the one in the end zone, that would have put the ball on the one-yard line. Should have called
it. Yeah, they missed it.
Wasn't called.
But I don't know what you do to solve it. They're
robot
now full-time,
refs.
Right?
Robot refs.
Aren't they getting full-time wages or whatever? They kind of...
You know what? You need full-time cyborgs calling the games.
Last thing to mention, the Steelers' defense is great. So they beat the Chargers 20-10. I know Justin Herbert, you know, didn't finish the game. They allowed just 10 points to Atlanta in the opener, 6 points to Denver in week 2, and then 10 to the Chargers. They're giving up just 8.7 points per game. They're only giving up 229 yards per game.
The percentage of making the playoffs when you start 3-0 is 76%. So you do the math on that.
Mike Tomlin going to have another winning season.
Who are they playing this week, Cakes?
I think they get the Colts.
That still means a quarter of the time they don't, Jason.
Steelers are at
I'm
the
just
Colts.
Saying, that's pretty damn good if you go 3-0, 76%. I mean, you might want to just chalk it up.
Coming up next, we'll get the Bengals perspective from Mo Agger, afternoon host on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati as we talk Monday Night Football, Commanders against the Bengals. Welcome back.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned, and way more sales going
So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. Going to check in right now on the BetQL guest hotline with Mo Egger. He's an afternoon host on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, where, of course, the Bengals have started off 0-2. What's the atmosphere there in Cincy? Are you guys used to these slow starts?
Well, we are. Third straight year, they're 0-2. Second straight year, they're 0-2 going into a home game on Monday Night Football. And so there's a familiarity here that I think has lended itself to, I think, a tiny bit of confidence coming into this game. First of all, the Bengals are at home. They are favored. They're getting T. Higgins back for the game tonight. So offensively, they'll be as whole as they have been. And let's face it, this is a place they have been before. They recovered last year from the 0-2 start to at least be in the thick of things when Joe Burrow got hurt. 2 years ago, they were 0-2 and ended up making the AFC Championship game. And so I think there's a confidence, but I also think there's a sense that, you know what, if you keep doing this, if you keep getting close to the fire, at some point you're going to get burned. And if the idea is to start 0-2 every single year, at some point that 0-2 is going to turn into 0-3.
Mo, how is Joe Burrow handling being in the longest losing stretch of his career? No wins in his past four starts, longest stretch in his career at any level. So, I mean, it has to be in the back of his brain at some point, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I think more than anything in the back of his brain and in the first game of the season against the Patriots was that it wasn't 100%. By his own sort of admission, and when I say sort of, Joe, over the course of training camp, never said that he's 100%. You know, he talked about making progress and being where he needs to be at that point. And if you watched his performance against the Patriots, it was very un-Burrow-like. It wasn't that he played poorly, although he did. It was the unwillingness to throw the ball downfield. 16 of his first 20 passes didn't go more than 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. He just didn't look comfortable. I thought last week he took a step in the right direction. He wasn't flawless by any stretch, but he looked more like the Joe that we have kind of come to get to used to here. And so, you know, how's he handling the losing streak? I think, well, he's more concerned with just getting better, getting healthier, getting T. Higgins back, and feeling more comfortable doing the things that we have associated him with. He did more of those things against Kansas City. We'll see if he's willing to do more of those things tonight.
Is Higgins going to be on some sort of pitch count coming back from the hamstring, or is he full go, full bore, 100%?
I'm going to guess there's some sort of plan to ease him back into things. But I'll say this about T. Higgins. This is a guy who wants to play. You know, for those who wondered, well, is you know, you even had people who thought maybe he was faking the hamstring injury because the team franchise tagged him. That's not what this dude does. I mean, this is a guy who last year in a game against Kansas City, with the season hanging in the balance, was willing himself back onto the field despite dealing with a hamstring issue. And so I think T is approaching the game thinking, I'm going to play every conceivable offensive snap. But I do think the coaches are going to try to execute some sort of plan for him where he, you know, he's not playing a small amount of snaps, but he's not exactly, you know, going through his entire workload. But it's going to be interesting. Look, this hamstring issue has been one that's been recurring now for a while. This is why they didn't sign him to a long-term contract. He is always dealing with hamstring issues. And so, you know, it's one thing to go into the game thinking T's going to play 40 snaps. Ortiz going to play every offensive snap he can. I'm really curious physically, how does he hold up? Does this become an issue tonight? Does it turn into something that we're talking about long-term? Does it turn into something that we're talking about often during the course of the season?
Mo, I know Ja'Marr Chase was a big story, obviously, in training camp because of the contract issue and started off a little slow in the first couple of weeks. But I got to think that Zach Taylor and Dan Pitcher, your OC, looked at tape of what the Giants did, and they targeted Neighbors 18 times. Okay, 18 times. Look, the secondary for the Commanders isn't very good. The defense as a whole isn't very good. And I got to think that Zach Taylor is going to say, Joe and Ja'Marr, this is your game. If they're smart, they would target Ja'Marr 12 to 14 times because he could do some damage that way.
A little bit of a callback to the exact same game last year. 0-2 start, game 3, Monday Night Football, and Ja'Marr Chase got targeted 13 times. Mm-hmm. He was the best player on the field. And it wasn't, you know, Jamar's just going to run streak routes. I mean, he was catching passes in every conceivable way. I have to think that's a huge part of what they want to do. And look, I mean, it's quite simple. When Ja'Marr is playing without T, Ja'Marr gets double teamed. When Ja'Marr is playing and he's got T opposite him, he's not getting double teamed. And I think the other thing is, if you paid attention to what the Bengals did last week against Kansas City, they tapped into suddenly this wealth of tight ends they have. And so they should be difficult to defend. And if you're difficult to defend, then your best offensive player, and I think most of us would agree that's Ja'Marr, should have an easier time. And against this Washington defense, you've got to think he's got a chance to have a very big game. And I think relative to how they've used him over the first couple of weeks, you're going to see a steadier dose of passes aimed toward Ja'Marr. I don't know that they're all going to be deep downfield, but yes, you're right. I would be surprised if we come out of this game wondering where the targets were for Ja'Marr Chase.
What are you guys seeing on tape, or what are the coaches saying about defending Jaden?
Well, you got to keep him from beating you on the ground. I mean, look, this is a defense that we knew coming into the season was going to be bad against the run. We knew that. Well, it's been bad against the run, and it's probably less equipped to be better against the run because they had two defensive tackles come out of last week's game with injuries. One of them is not going to play, Sheldon Rankins. The other, they're going to make a game-time decision, DJ Hill. That's already a deficiency. So, you know, the coaches will say all the requisite things about Jaden Daniels throwing, but if you're going to beat the Bengals and if you're going to take advantage of a defensive weakness, it's stopping the run. But the secondary has been retooled, and, you know, they've got Dax Hill, a safety playing corner, Von Bell, one of their two starting safeties, probably isn't going to play tonight. And I think any team, certainly early in the season, is being neglectful of what they need to do if they don't try to throw the ball downfield and test what the Bengals have done in the secondary. But if any team's going to come here and win, New England did this and did it to almost perfection. You're going to beat them at the point of attack. You're going to make them miss tackles. You're going to expose a weakness up. I mean, the Bengals this week brought in Lawrence Guy, who's like my age, played 14 years in the NFL off the street, and I think he's going to get significant snaps tonight. So I think if Washington wins or keeps this close at least, it's going to be because they're the third consecutive team to really run it well against them.
That's our opportunity.
Hey, right. Mo, I wanted to ask you your opinion and like the rest of the Cincinnati opinion or media opinion about the end of the Chiefs game and how and I watched pretty much every play. And on the 4th and 16 with 40 seconds to go, give or take a few, they rush three guys. And Mahomes is able to bounce out and has a little bit more time to throw it downfield as opposed to running, you know, rushing four or five guys and making him get rid of the ball quicker. Now, the pass interference I thought was a good call on your rookie. I think his name was Anthony. I can't remember his first name. But it was a good call. And obviously it set up the Butker field goal. But your thoughts on how they played that, dropping eight guys back as opposed to making Mahomes throw the ball a little quicker?
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. And what I'll add to it is, Trey Hendrickson, their edge rusher, was dominant in that game.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he got their starting left tackle benched. All they could do across the course of the afternoon was basically put him in a headlock to stop him. And so here's what I didn't understand. If you're only going to rush three, you're basically allowing the Kansas City Chiefs to triple team a guy who had been the best player on the field. That doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you put Trey in a position where you could tell him, go end the game for us? Which the way to do that is by having him encounter as few blockers as possible. So rushing three meant three dudes were going to triple team Trey Hendrickson, which is exactly what happened. That's what didn't make any sense. Everything else I couldn't agree more. You're going to give Patrick Mahomes time to do exactly what he did. The pass interference call was a good call. You also had a guy, Dejon Anthony, who's a seventh-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
That was his eighth NFL snap.
Right.
And so it's rushing three, but it's also the personnel they didn't have on the field. They didn't have Sam Hubbard on the field, probably their second-best defensive lineman. They didn't have Mike Hilton on the field. Their terrific slot corner, who's certainly got better ball skills at this stage of his career than Dejon Anthony. I mean, there were so many things just in that play to second guess and wonder about. And you could yell and scream that that's not a flag that should have been thrown there. Look, it was early contact.
Yeah,
That's pass interference. But even if you want to say it was a 50-50 call, I think because of how the Bengals played in the fourth quarter, twice having the ball with the lead and a chance to extend the lead, or in the second chance in the game, and then with how they chose to play that individual snap, they put themselves in a position to be, if you think they were screwed by the officials, and I do not, they put themselves in a position to be screwed by the official.
Good point.
So what's your prediction tonight? Give me a score.
I think the spread's a bit hefty. I'll be honest with you. 7.5 points for a team that's very good stopping the run. So I think we get a game. I think Cincinnati wins. I do think they're the better team. I'll take Joe Burrow against the Washington defense that's dead last in DVOA. But I think just enough of what the Commanders can do on the ground, and I think so little of what the Bengals can do stopping the run, that I think we get a game in the fourth quarter. And and if we do, I think you're gonna get a real sense of apprehension from the fans at Paycor Stadium, given the fact that this team cannot afford to go 0-3, but I do think the Bengals will pull it out. I'll say something like 24-20, somewhere in that ballpark.
I like it, though. Some respect.
That's a cover for the Commanders,
some respect for
too.
My Commanders.
That is a like cover. It. That's a cover.
The bar is low here, my friend.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mo.
Thanks a lot, Mo.
I live in Cincinnati. I know all about the bar being low.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point.
Thank you, buddy.
Afternoon host on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Scott Abraham joins us. Sports director and anchor for ABC7 here in D.C.
We didn't get a Jason Goes to Blacksburg recap yet.
Yeah.
As his trip down south to see the Hokies
take one
on the chin against Rutgers.
I probably made that trip, you know, over the course of the last 6 years. My oldest daughter was a freshman in 19, so, you know, call it 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Probably made that trip 30 times.
Sure.
It's just an awful, awful trip down 81. It's so frustrating. Because for the most part, 98% of it is two lanes.
Yeah.
And left lane, you're always going to get, you know, some guy who wants to go 65 miles per hour. Sometimes it's a tractor trailer.
Right.
But if it's just a donkey who doesn't know how to drive and doesn't get over, it just slows you for miles. And it's so frustrating. I hate the
left
trip.
Left lane for passing, not for cruising.
How often are you happy?
Now?
Not very often.
He's definitely not happy when he drives.
Oh, I hate it. I hate
and
that
then,
trip.
Tech lost, right?
Yeah, I mean, Virginia Tech.
I hate that.
Pull back the curtains a little bit. They're a bad football team. And a lot of it is, certainly a lot of it's on the field. But the coaching has been, in my opinion, especially in the first half, abysmal. Their offensive coordinator who went to Maryland, Tyler Bowen, he was an offensive lineman there. He's been an offensive line coach, and he's been a tight ends coach. He's never, you know, he's never been a quarterback's coach. He wasn't a quarterback in college. I just don't understand how you can put a former offensive lineman in as an OC. And you can see it in the first half of these games. They've got to be the worst production in college football in the first half.
It does not
They've
make
scored
sense.
Three total touchdowns in the first half in four games. Three. So they were,
and then they loosen up in the second.
Yeah, they get better in the second half because they start, you know, they're behind, so they got to throw the ball more.
Mm.
But, yeah, because they've got talent. They just don't use it the way you should use it in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And they put themselves in
holes.
Are we
talking to people in the stands again?
No. Yeah,
talking to strangers?
No, I wasn't. I was like, I did in the Vanderbilt game.
Yeah, you said the Vanderbilt game, you were saying they got attacked, the cover four defense or whatever. Yeah, you were
and
saying.
They just refused to do it. And some of the play calling is just, you just scratch your head. I mean, they're down 23-7 late in the third, and they're running the ball at the middle. What the F are you doing? So anyway, it was, yeah. I mean, they've lost to Rutgers back-to-back years. Inexcusable.
Did you go out after? Because it was the parents' weekend, right?
It's parents' weekend.
My brother was there. Did you run into my brother this time?
Did not. I mean, there was a billion people there.
Right.
No, but we started tailgating at 10:45.
Ooh, that's early.
I love that.
That's an
early
one.
It was a 10:45, first drink poured.
What was your first drink?
Vodka and don't sleep.
Okay, very good. Like it. Scotty's but, vodka, but, don't sleep. Good combo.
But, you know, we had a good time tailgating, and then so I stopped drinking basically at the game. Mm-hmm. So I stopped drinking at, call it 3:30. Probably should have kept going, but right. Got tired early. Oh, I also had a celeb sighting.
You had a celeb run in?
I actually said hello to him.
Mike Vick. Just like Drabby. Bigger than Drabby's?
No, not big. Not can't be bigger than T-Mac, Terry McLaurin.
I think he might be.
Really?
Put it this way. He won a Super Bowl as a coach.
Oh, that's pretty big.
What Virginia Tech.
Oh, was that head coach?
Yep.
As a head coach, he won
went
a Super
to Tech.
Bowl.
He played quarterback at Virginia Tech. He was just inducted into the Virginia Tech Hall of Fame. That's why he was there. He coached Tom Brady.
Oh, did Bruce Arians win a Super Bowl?
Yeah.
He's the worst coach to ever win a Super Bowl.
Okay.
So at least the worst media coach to ever win the Super Bowl. We had him on as a guest, and he was a big dud.
I didn't tell him that.
I'm sure you didn't. And I'm sure he's a nice guy behind the scenes.
He was pimping a book, right?
He was, yeah.
Jason?
Yes, he was wearing the hat.
Fedora.
Yeah.
So why don't you teach Strab what to say? What'd you say?
Terry McLaurin greater than Bruce Arians. I'm sorry.
Let's see. How old is Bruce Arians?
I'm going to guess he's 60.
He's 71.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. He's 71.
What did you say? Teach Strab how to interact with celebrities.
Well, he had more drinks in him, too, at least.
Yeah.
No, I just said, hey, coach, nice to meet you. My name is Jason. Blah, blah. I'm a DC guy. My daughter's a senior. Just want to say hi. That's all I said.
What was his response?
He goes, thank you very much.
Yeah.
He goes, thank you very much. Nice to meet you. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was with a bunch of people at
a
table.
So what did you get out of that interaction? That's what I don't understand.
I was just under the influence a little bit.
All right. See, that's all right. What I'm telling you. That was it.
If I was 100% sober.
You know what, though?
Have...
In social settings, Jason is just more affable and outgoing than at least this half of the table.
But this is what I've heard about Aaron.
If he's drinking.
I think even without booze in him, he's just...
I probably wouldn't have said anything to him if I didn't have any booze.
You're probably right.
Yeah. But I've heard he's just a really nice guy, and I just wanted to say hello.
Mm. Did you tell me you didn't say you sucked on our show?
No, I completely forgot that, too. That's so funny.
You forgot his appearance?
Chase probably had a Sports Illustrated.
I mean, I remember is he just sort of was grumpy and didn't feel like answering anything.
Yeah, I can't remember what he was promoting.
He was promoting a book.
I still can't believe he was the head coach and actually won a Super Bowl.
Tom Brady.
I told you. Tom Brady just fell out of the sky and just granted Tampa a Super Bowl.
Welcome.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Speaking of college football,
but anyway, that was a very frustrating, day because when you looked at the schedule for the Hokies to start the year, and maybe I kind of just bought into the way they finished the year last year, the way the drones played at quarterback and all the preseason hype they were getting. You looked at the schedule and went Vanderbilt winnable. They win two games a year.
Yeah,
Marshall at home. Okay, they lost their best two players. Offensively, who killed them last year, but it's a home game. Old Dominion, got to beat them. And then Rutgers. All right, Rutgers, well-coached team. Mm-hmm. Good, but we got them at home. Look, you should be 3-1 at the worst, maybe 4-0. They're 2-2. Now, they play Miami on Friday night. They got zero chance.
You know what the U's going to do to them?
Zero chance of beating them. Yes. So now you're looking at a team that we're preseason going maybe 7-8 wins, possibly 9.
You know what?
They might win 4.
They have to go to Stanford cross-country trip after that.
Yeah, they might
win 4
games.
People accuse me, and maybe rightly so, of looking sort of on the bright side of things with the Commanders when I'm trying to anticipate how a season might go. You do the same thing with Tech. You're just as biased with Tech as I am with the Commanders.
You mean like wishy-washy? Yeah.
No, meaning that you have.
Did he say Tech has weapons?
You're drinking the Virginia Tech Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You have rose-colored glasses.
Oh, you mean before the season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, yeah.
I
love maroon
because
and orange Kool-Aid.
I looked at the schedule. And
you
go,
look at it and you see the bright side.
I go, there's no, I mean,
he's Mr. Brightside.
It's one thing. It's one thing to lose to a team that's more talented than you.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, player for player, you got to beat Vanderbilt.
Right.
player for player, you got to beat Rutgers at home.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
It's just the first half, man. They suck in the first. They've got to be the one of the worst five teams in college football in terms of offensive production in the first half of games, and they put themselves in a hole, and it's hard to dig out. And they've been very disappointing.
Speaking of college football, what did you think of the Colorado finish? That was amazing.
How about the guy in our survivor pool who had Baylor?
No. Too strong.
I mean, can you believe that?
So you have the Shedeur Sanders Hail Mary, which was great. And then Travis Hunter, I don't know if he'll win the Heisman, but he had great offensive numbers, and then he makes the play of the game defensively.
Well, he's the best all-around
player. How's he going to win the Heisman? Ty Felton from Maryland is going to win the Heisman because he's silly. All he does is go out and catch 10 or 12 balls every game.
You ever heard of Cam Ward?
You know who Cam Ward is?
Felton's got to be tops in the country in yards or
stud
catches. He's got to be up there. The Baylor loss. And they missed a field goal on the drive before that. It would have put them up 10.
College kickers.
Now, I think it was kind of a long one.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you miss a field goal, you go up 10 games sealed, and then they go right down the field and then the Hail Mary.
Do you guys know the Ty Felton story? It's a great story.
I think he's from Ashburn.
You can tell everybody.
Well, he went to Stonebridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went to the same high school as Jonathan Allen.
And his junior year, he had offers from Maryland, Virginia Tech. And he ends up shredding his knee, just blows it up. Tech takes back the scholarship offer.
Oh.
They rescinded the offer after he tore his knee up. Mm. And then Maryland and Locke stuck by him, ended up choosing Maryland. It's paid dividends.
Mm-hmm. It certainly has.
That seems really short-sighted because ACLs are so well come back from, relatively speaking, for like a pretty serious injury. The return rate on that's pretty great at this point for elite athletes. That ain't a great look for Tech, to be honest with you.
I'm sure it happens all the time.
Probably
with schools.
Well, no, a lot of guys they tear their ACLs. Schools just they hold the commitment.
Who knows how that all works out? Maybe they were waiting on a couple other guys.
Yeah. I mean, there are other factors.
I mean, if you could predict the future, and Ty Felton's one of the best receivers in the country, statistically anyway. They obviously would have kept him. But, man, it was a bad weekend. The best part of the weekend was the tailgating and then the intro.
Enter Sandman.
Place is going nuts.
Yeah.
65,000 people going nuts.
Right after the intro.
And then they go three and out.
It was just diarrhea.
And then they go three and out, and then to get the ball back, they fumble the punt.
Exit Sandman.
Yeah, exit Sandman. As soon as Hetfield stopped singing, everything went south.
Yeah, it was. And then they get back and they tie the game up at 23. You're thinking, all right, this would be an unbelievable comeback.
That was good. That was good.
And then Drones throws a pick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
Hey, when the Terps are in a bowl, we'll wave. The Terps will wave to you.
You got a tough one at Indiana.
I understand. I know that.
Hey, it is a burgundy.
But they
gold.
Are better. They got a better quarterback.
Yeah.
It is a burgundy gold game day on the Fan presented by Rood. Is your cooling system letting you down? Score a touchdown with Rood and experience peak performance. Dominate the season with unmatched cooling power and visit RUUD.com. If it ain't Rood, it ain't right. Coming up next, Scott Abraham from ABC7 as we talk Commanders Bengals.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.